And welcome back to the podcast, everybody. Thank you so much for joining me here again today. Super excited about today's episode for a few reasons. First off, this is the 50th Educate Your Travel podcast episode. So super excited about that. And then I also just have a great week in Japan to share with all of y'all. So let's go ahead and get into the episode. Whenever you fly into Japan, you're really going to have two options, and your options are either going to be Tokyo or Osaka. And for what we were wanting to do on this trip, we really did not care too much about Tokyo, and so we decided to fly straight through to Osaka. We did have a layover in Tokyo, and so my first interaction in Japan did happen to be in Tokyo, and it was a very good one. Went through customs there super quick and easy. And we were transferring terminals because we were taking a domestic flight over to Osaka. And when we were leaving the customs area, there was a sign, one sign pointing to the left that said, go here to change terminals. And then there was another sign that said, go the opposite direction for domestic transfers. And I was like, both of those apply to us, so I'm not really sure what to do. So I kind of walked up to a help desk just to kind of look at the video monitors. And before I could even figure out like which flight I needed to look for, the lady from behind the desk left the desk and walked over to us and asked me if I needed any help. And I think we all know that in an airport, that is a very rare thing for anyone behind a desk to come out and help. When you're just standing there a little dumbfounded. And she pointed me in the right direction. We went and hopped on the transfer bus, and everything worked out really nice. And I can honestly say that basically every interaction after that met that same standard. People in Japan were super friendly, super nice. It didn't matter if we were in Osaka or Kyoto with more tourists, or Nara, which is a little bit of a smaller area. Everyone was super kind, super friendly, and we just had a great time on this trip overall. So back to Osaka, we spent an entire week in Japan. We spent 3 days in Osaka, and we landed there pretty early in the morning. We landed at around 8 o'clock, and there's two airports there in Osaka. I don't really think it matters which one you fly into. To get to the city center, it's going to be around 45 minutes to an hour to get there. So we got to our hotel around 9:30 or so. And fortunately, we were able to check into our hotel. They had one room available at that moment. And they were like, do you want this one? And we were like, absolutely. So we went up, showered. I think we may have even taken a little nap. And then we were ready to rock and roll. A couple of things before I get into our first day there in Osaka. When you land, you're more than likely going to want to take the metro. And the transportation in Osaka is very nice. It's very convenient. It works very well. Apple Maps does a very good job at helping you navigate through the different subway systems. That was the one thing I noticed that was a little strange about the metro system in Japan. Was it was a bunch of different lines put together. So let's say I wanted to go from this side of town to the other. Normally, in any other city that I've traveled in with a metro system, you would get on a train, and you might have to change the train a couple times, but you'd get out, and then you'd go to a different platform, and you'd get on a different train, and then you know you'd get off that one, and maybe you'd get on another one to take you to your destination. You would scan in before your first train, and you'd scan out on your last train. Well, in Japan, that worked sometimes, but there's a few different systems going on. There's like the metro, there's the city metro, there's the JR line, there's JR Express, Semi-Express. There's a whole bunch of different ones, and while Apple Maps does a great job explaining where to go and how to get there, sometimes you might scan in to like the metro, and then you take that to a certain stop, you get out, and like the JR line and the metro aren't in the same building. So you'd have to scan out. You might even have to like walk outside and go to a different little station, and you have to scan back in, and then you have to get on the JR line or whatever, and then you take that one, and then you get off and scan again. And so it was more steps, I suppose. It wasn't really that complicated once you figured out what to do and how to read the maps and everything, but it was just something that I wasn't used to. So if you feel like, oh, maybe I shouldn't leave this train station, like obviously, you know, I'm getting on another train, that might not be the case. You might need to leave and then go to another station that's literally like 100 feet from the first one's exit. That's just how a lot of the trains there work. And so that was a little bit different and something that I thought I might pass along. Before you get on the train, you can buy, I think they're called like Suica or Suica. They're S-U-I-C-A cards. There's a few different types and they all do the exact same thing. So I really am not sure why there are so many different brands. I guess different companies own them and get a cut depending on which card that you have. I've been reading that in Tokyo, they've stopped giving these out to tourists and you have to get like a tourist card for the metro. But when we landed in Osaka, we were still able to get one of the plastic, sort of like credit card looking things. And you just top it up and whenever you go through the gate, you scan it. And whenever you leave, you scan it, just like in any other metro. One interesting thing is you can use those cards other places. Like when we were at the airport, we still had some money on our cards and we were able to use them in like a snack store inside the airport to buy snacks before our flight. So kind of weird. They're not just for the trains, but that's where you are primarily going to use them, I would imagine. Last but not least, before we ever get started, you know, I'm a huge advocate for just getting your cash at the airport ATMs. And I'm still an advocate for that. There are a ton of ATMs all throughout Osaka and Kyoto and wherever else you're gonna be in Japan. So don't really feel like you have to get all of your money out at one time because there's gonna be plenty of places to get out cash later. I will say that I pulled out $200 US or pretty close to that equivalent. It was 30,000 yen as soon as we landed there in Osaka. And that 30,000 yen lasted us basically the whole trip. The only thing that I can guarantee you you're gonna have to use cash on is filling up that transit card. You have to pay cash for that. And then there were some restaurants that you had to pay cash at and then a few different souvenirs and things like that. But a lot of places did take credit cards, a lot of restaurants and different stores. So don't feel like you need to take out a ton of cash, especially right off the bat. So like I said, I did that 30,000 yen lasted me and my wife the whole week. And then the day before we left, I knew that the train back to the airport was going to cost almost exactly the amount of cash that we had. So I went ahead and took out another 10,000 yen. So if I would have had like 35,000 for the entire week, that would have lasted us and we would have been just fine. Okay, so once you got your cash, once you're at the airport, rested up a little bit, we stay in the hotel probably around like 11 o'clock or noon, and then we got kind of hungry, so we wanted to head out. Once again, talking about the transportation in Osaka is great. There's metro stations basically like every couple of blocks. I didn't feel like we ever had to walk very far to get to a train station, which was awesome in terms of moving around the city. Everything was on time, everything was clean, and I would definitely recommend taking the metro there in Osaka. Okay, so the very first thing that we did, our hotel was pretty close to the Osaka Castle. I would say just a few blocks away. I think it took us maybe like 10 minutes to get there by train. So pretty close, a little south of the Osaka Castle there. And I think that's a pretty good spot. It was also right above Dotonbori Street, which I'll talk about here in a second. So I would highly recommend that area. It was a pretty quiet area of town. There was plenty of transportation options. There were not as many restaurants right around the hotel, but we did not seem to really have an issue with that because we ate at different places and then just took the train back to where we were staying. So around noon, we left our hotel and we headed over to the Koromon Ichiba Market, and it's sort of like a seafood market. They do have other things as well, but I think it's mainly known as a fresh seafood market. There's huge crabs on display. There's like eel and octopus and a whole bunch of different things. One cool aspect of that market is they all have like little tiny grills set up at their shops, and so you can basically buy like a piece of crab or a sea urchin or whatever, and they can cook it right there on the spot for you, and you can either, I guess, just eat it there, or you can just try it out and then see if you want to buy more. There are a bunch of tourists there, and it's just a pretty cool place to try out weird local delicacies, I suppose. I will say Osaka is really close to Kobe, where they have like the Wagyu beef, and they're famous for that. And they did have skewers of Wagyu there at the market. And on the first day of a trip, I'm not going to just be balling out and spending all my money. And they were charging like $20 for a skewer of Wagyu. But I highly recommend if that's something you want to try and you're not going over to Kobe, which is only like a 30-minute ride on the train, by the way. So that's definitely a good day excursion. But the Koromon Ichiban market definitely had the best looking Wagyu that I saw on the whole trip. Unless you were going to like a specialized steak restaurant. After that, when I was like, okay, yeah, it's been $20 to get a skewer of Wagyu, the quality of it just was not as nice looking. So if that's something that you want to do and you're in the area, I highly recommend you do it there. So near the Koromon Ichiban market is Dotonbori Street. And Dotonbori Street is kind of known as like the Times Square of Osaka. There's just a ton of restaurants, a bunch of street food, street performers, big buildings with lit up signs, and there's like casinos and things like that. It's just a really happening spot of town. And so there's a bunch of shops as well. So we just kind of walked over there. This was in the middle of the day, so I kind of just wanted to check it out. We had lunch there. And we did go back later, just so you can see the lights. I highly recommend going at night. If you're only going to go one time, it definitely is not as cool in the middle of the day. But we were in the area and we wanted to check that out. So we kind of just walked around for a little bit. Like I said, grabbed some lunch. And then we headed over to the Osaka Castle. Now, the Osaka Castle is one of the most famous landmarks in all of Osaka. And it's very beautiful, for sure. From the outside, it's really gorgeous. It's on top of like a man. I don't know if there was an actual hill there before, but now it's just like a fortified, like man-made brick hill or stone hill. Like, it's been built up over the years. So it kind of just stands above the trees in this park. And so the cool thing about it is there is like a city park around it, and there's just a ton of people hanging out. There's like some restaurants and some coffee shops. There's people walking their dogs, riding bikes. It's just a really cool place to hang out, kind of like Central Park, you know? And so to go to Osaka Castle is technically free because you can walk around the park, you can see it from the outside. But if you want to go inside, you do need to buy a ticket. And this was literally the only ticket I was able to buy in advance. Whenever I was planning this trip, I was looking like, okay, these are all like the temples and pagodas that I want to go see, but you couldn't buy the tickets in advance. This was the only place that I could buy them. And so I went ahead and did it. I think it was like $3 or $4 per person, so definitely not very expensive. And if you want to go inside, I highly recommend buying them in advance, because when we got there, the line was probably like an hour long to get to the tickets and then get inside. And it literally took me like 30 seconds to buy my tickets online. So I highly recommend getting those in advance. And something really cool is they're good for like a month window. So like I said, I was gonna be there the second week of March, and they're like, all right, well, this is good for a 4-week window around the date that you want. And so it really freed up scheduling, because that first day that we were there, I was like, well, we got some free time. Do we want to go to the castle, or we can go tomorrow? It doesn't really matter, because we weren't locked into a certain date or a certain time. So I really liked that. I will say the inside of the castle is kind of set up like a museum. And I'll be honest, Japanese history is not my favorite time period or historical culture to learn about. I like the Middle East a little bit more. That's kind of like my bread and butter, the things that I've like. If I'm in the Middle East, I want to go and see every single site. But Japanese, I like the food, I like the architecture. The history, though, is not necessarily the thing that I'm always going to be seeking out there. So take what I'm about to say with a pinch of salt, I suppose. So the inside of the castle is kind of set up like a museum. There were a ton of people in there, and I would say like 90% of the artifacts were just like documents that had been written and signed by the emperor at the time that the castle was built. There were a few paintings, a few like screen, like painted screens. There was a reconstruction of like a tea room set up, which was pretty cool. But all in all, there was nothing that blew me away like, oh my gosh, like I've always wanted to see this artifact. This is so cool. What did kind of make it all worth it was at the very top, there was a viewpoint and you could basically see all of Osaka. So I at least recommend going for that because the view was really cool. You could see the entire park, you could see the city. And then, you know, if you like the history, then that's kind of a bonus. One thing, when you're going inside, there's like a line that allows you to go straight to the top on an elevator, and then there's a side where you walk up the stairs. And so the museum is like floors 2 through 5 or something like that, and the elevator takes you straight up to like floor 6, and floor 7 is like the observatory. And so I saw that and I was like, well, I don't want to skip the museum, like that's half the reason we're here, right? And so I convinced my wife to take the stairs. So we walk up the stairs and we're like seeing all the artifacts and things like that as we're going up the stairs. But then I realized the people who are leaving are also walking down the stairs and seeing all the same artifacts. So if you take the elevator right off the bat, you will have to stand in the elevator line, which would have probably taken maybe 20 minutes or so. But you're not actually going to miss all the artifacts like I originally thought. You can walk the stairs down when you leave and still get to see all of the items in the museum that way. Okay, well, after the Osaka Castle, we were pretty tired. And so we got some dinner and then we headed back to the hotel. We were back at the hotel maybe by like 8 o'clock or something like that. And there was sumo wrestling on TV, so we figured we're in Japan, so we should watch some sumo wrestling, and then we passed out. We had jet lag bad on this trip. At least the first, like, 3 days, we were in our hotel just, like, passed out by, like, 7:30 each night. Okay, so one other cool thing about Japan, I don't know if this is necessarily cool, but it makes you feel like less of a bum on a trip. I personally like to get up at the crack of dawn to do things. It's the exact opposite. Like when I'm at home, like working, I don't want to get up in the morning. But when I'm on vacation, I'm like, I got to get up and do everything. But in Japan, stuff doesn't open until like 10 in the morning. And so even if you sleep in till like 8:30, 9 o'clock, like you should on vacation, you don't feel like, oh man, I'm wasting my time in Japan, because literally everything is closed anyways. So that's really nice. And also things close at like 5 in the afternoon as well, so you don't have to stay out real late either and still feel like you did as much as you could in a day. So that's really nice. So the next day that we were there, our first totally full day, even though the day before was really full because we got there at 8 in the morning, the second day was a little rainy. And so we went and had breakfast, and then we went to a donut shop at like 10 in the morning, had breakfast, and then a sushi place was opening next door at like 11. So we literally just sat in this donut shop for like an hour before we went and had lunch. And so one thing I do recommend if you like sushi is going to the Kura Conveyor Belt Sushi. It's like 80 cents for a plate of 2 to 4 sushi rolls. And me and my wife ate like as much sushi as we could handle, and it cost like $15 total for both of us. Japan was really cheap once we were there. I was really surprised how little everything cost. But I really like sushi, but I never eat it because I never get full and it's always expensive. But here I was stuffed and it was super cheap, so that was awesome. I highly recommend it. So one thing that I had kind of put in my back pocket because I knew that it was gonna rain possibly a day that we were there was the Osaka Aquarium. And this was definitely the most expensive thing that we did on our trip. It would cost around $20 per person. But the aquarium was amazing. They had a lot of awesome animals. The the different aquariums were set up really cool. You could see them at different levels. So let's say like penguins, for example, they had penguins there and you could look at them from above and you could like see them like above the water, like on their little rocky areas. And then you could go down a level and you could see them, you know, like jumping into the water or jumping out of the water. And then you could go down another level and you could see them like diving all the way to the bottom of their little pond area. So it was really cool. They had some awesome stuff. They have whale sharks. They're one of like the only aquarium in the world. I think there's like four in the whole world that has whale sharks in them. So that was a really cool experience to see them. And we were probably there maybe 2 hours, hour and a half, 2 hours. But it was a really great time. And I would highly recommend it, especially, you know, if you're there during a rainy day, you can't, you know, be outside and going to different sites. Highly recommend the Osaka Aquarium. Later that night, the rain cleared away, and so we did head back to Dotonbori Street and the Koromon Ichiba Market area because you could then see it all lit up and things like that. We had some local food down there on Dotonbori, which was really tasty, and then we also went to a temple called Hotsunji Temple. I'll go ahead and say this right now. I'm probably going to mess up a bunch of these names. So if you're curious, you can look on my Instagram. I should have most places tagged in my pictures. And then you can also just feel free to drop me a message so I can explain what I'm talking about here. So Hotsunji Temple was kind of just tucked away inside like an alley in the Koromon Ichiba Market area. And I'll be honest, there's like hundreds of these temples everywhere. You go on a walk down any street and you pass three or four in like 10 minutes. But this one was really cool. It had lanterns hung up that were all lit up. It was really pretty. And it's just right there in a main area, just kind of off the path. So it's a little quieter in there. And if you're in the area, I would definitely check it out. It's one of the more popular ones in that area. So that was day two. Not as crazy. I'll say I don't feel like any of the days on this trip were very crazy. They were all pretty chill, which was pretty nice. Our last day in Osaka, all that we did was we got up not too early in the morning, maybe like 8:30 or so. Kind of got packed up and everything, left our bags in the hotel, and then we went down to the Shitinoji Temple. And this temple is more of a complex. There were like four or five big buildings, some pagodas, some temples, some shrines all set up. And this is a pretty popular temple there in Osaka. It was a little bit south of where we were staying. We walked there, probably maybe like a 20 to 30 minute walk. But it was really nice. We like stopped in a bakery on the way there and got some food and just kind of enjoyed wandering around the city there. I highly recommend that temple. It was next to like a cemetery. There was also like an elementary school. And as a teacher, it's always fun to like walk next to a school and see like how the kids and the teachers are interacting and just how the culture is in that environment that I'm pretty used to and just seeing how it's different. But the Shitinoji Temple Complex, I would definitely recommend if you're looking for a bigger, more popular temple to go check out in Osaka. So one awesome thing about Japan in general is the train system, which I've kind of already mentioned, but they go from city to city. And so because of that, there was no need to book a flight to get us to another town. And because the trains run so frequently, there wasn't any reason to buy train tickets in advance either. So that really freed us up to be like, okay, let's go check out this temple. Let's just kind of wander around. You know, it's noon. We can check into our hotel in like an hour or two. Let's just go ahead and go and, you know, see what happens. It gave us a lot more flexibility and there was no like having to rush or feel like we were going to be late for something all the time, which was very, very refreshing for sure. So one thing, I'll go ahead and interject this here. Whenever you're researching traveling in Japan, you're probably going to run across the JR Rail Pass. And this is something that you can buy, like, say, a week at a time or like a month at a time. And it's basically a pass that allows you to travel on the JR line wherever you're going for free once you buy this pass. recently they've hiked up the price of this pass to like $150, $200 or whatever, depending on how long you're going to be staying there. And I honestly do not think it's worth it. Nothing that I've read has ever said, oh my gosh, this saved me so much money. Maybe if you were doing a lot of long distance trips like Tokyo to Osaka to Kyoto, to just Hiroshima, all these different places, maybe possibly you could squeak out enough trips that it would pay for itself. But I'll be honest, we did a lot of train riding here in Japan, and I doubt we spent more than $50 per person. And I'm talking like we took a 2-hour trip from Kyoto to the airport. It was like a 45-minute trip from Osaka to Nara to Kyoto was another 45 minutes. So we probably spent several hours on the train and maybe spent $50 on our train passes the whole time. So I would definitely make sure you calculate some of your costs before you even consider purchasing the JR Rail Pass, because I highly doubt that you would ever make your money back on that pass, and I do not think it would save you money, except for some special circumstances, depending on your trip. So that is something that you will read about, but do not go into that blindly. Make sure that you do your research first. Okay, so we took the train to Nara from Osaka. It was about a 45-minute ride, and when I say it was cheap, it was like maybe $5 for that 45-minute train ride. So Nara is most famous for their deer park, and they have these pretty tame deer that have lived there for centuries. They used to be pretty sacred, I guess you could say, and protected. And while they're still protected, I don't think they hold the same revered status as they used to. But they're still really cool. You can buy like little packs of crackers and feed them to them, and they'll like bow to you, and you can pet them and take pictures with them, and it's just really cool. Great as Osaka. So just know when you're in Kyoto, you might have to walk a little bit more. You might have to take a bus to get to different places if you want it to be more convenient. It's just not gonna be as easy to get around as Osaka. Okay, so in Kyoto, the very first day when we got there, one thing which was interesting was we stayed like in the city center in Kyoto, and so it seemed like a way bigger city than Osaka. The vibes were just completely different. But like when we first got there, I was like, is Kyoto bigger than Osaka? Because it seems like a much bigger city, but it is not. It's like half the size. So it was just like where we were staying. And so I liked where we were staying. We were staying across the river from the Gion region of the city, and I liked that area, but my idea of what it was going to be like was a little off. So just make sure you kind of have a good understanding of what you are going to be staying in and around when you make those hotel decisions. So we kind of got there late afternoon, like 4 o'clock or something like that, and we checked into our hotel, and then we went and just kind of wandered around a little bit, got some food to eat, and then headed back to the hotel. The first full day in Kyoto, Kyoto was like the only place where there were places that I wanted to get up early to go to, and then we didn't. So the very first day we were there, we headed over to the Fushimi Inari Shrine, and this is the temple that has all of those orange torii gates. Like any picture you see with the orange torii gates is probably going to be at the Fushimi Inari Shrine. There is an awesome hike that goes up a mountain, and you are walking through the torii gates the whole way up. Everybody said that if you do the hike, then you'll get some of the famous pictures of just you and the gates alone, and that was true. When you first get there, there's a ton of people. I think we got there maybe around like 9:30, something like that. It took us about 40 minutes maybe to get there from the downtown area in Kyoto. So obviously we weren't there as early as I would have liked. You know, like normally you'd get there at like 6 o'clock to make sure you're the first people there, but we got there at like 9:30. So obviously there's tour groups there already. There's a bunch of individual people who are there. And so I would say the hike took us maybe like an hour and 20 minutes to get up to the top. And so I would say, you know, the first third of the trip, everybody is like, oh yeah, I've got this. And then like the second third of the trip, you're down to like a half of the amount of people. And then the last third, it's kind of spread out because people are taking breaks as they're hiking. People have quit and turned around. And so like that last third of the hike, that top third of the mountain, you are able to space out enough where you can quickly take a picture when the people in front of you turn a corner, or, you know, like turn around and take a snapshot real quick before somebody else comes up behind you. So there are some opportunities even like in that mid-morning time frame when there's still a lot of people up there. It is a very pretty hike. You're going through some like dark, lush green trees and forest with the orange gates. It's just really contrasting and a pretty scene. And the hike itself was not too crazy difficult. You can definitely take your time, and I think everybody could, you know, make it as long as they're not rushing. And I will say the view at the top, there was no view at the top. I definitely thought you were going to be able to like see all of Kyoto from up there, but all that was up there was like another little shrine. So if you're doing it for the views of the city, probably not worth it, but the views along the hike up there and then just, you know, doing the hike itself was pretty cool. So I recommend it. Being in the city for the rest of the week, it was nice to get out of the city and do some hiking out there. Okay, so once we left the Fushimi Inari Shrine, we headed over to the Gion region. And one of the main sites in that region is the Yasaka Pagoda. I don't think you can go inside the Yasaka Pagoda, but it stands out. It's going to be like one of those multi-tiered shrine-looking things that you are probably going to associate with Japan in general. And it just stands right there in the center of the area. All the streets kind of lead to it. It's a pretty famous site there. This Gion region is one of the most crowded places I have ever been in my life. It was like 1 o'clock in the afternoon and it was wall to wall people. I mean, we were walking down a street probably 20 to 30 feet wide and you were like shuffling with people right next to you on every side. It was kind of miserable if I'm being honest. Luckily, I'm taller than a lot of people, and so I could still see over the crowd, but I couldn't imagine being shorter and like just trapped in that mess of people. It would have been pretty terrible. So just be aware that unless you're there at like 5 a.m, there's probably going to be a ton of people in that area. It's like basically what I would consider the old town in Kyoto, and it's a very, very touristy spot. So just be prepared for that. After leaving that area, and you kind of want to wander around because there's a bunch of shops and things like that, we headed over to the Kiyomitsu Dera Temple. And this is another famous temple that you are going to find when you're researching Kyoto. But one of the main reasons that I wanted to go there was because I had learned that a festival was going to be taking place. There was some dragon festival. And so we went there specifically to see that. And this is another temple I had to pay to enter. And once again, it was like a dollar or two and the line lasted like 30 seconds. So once again, nothing to really be worried about there. The festival was really cool. It lasted about 2 hours. There were people carrying around a dragon thing and they were like doing chants and like doing dances. And it was just a really cool thing to experience. I bet 90% of the people did not realize that they were going to be there during this festival. But it was really cool to know that it was happening. And you could kind of like get a heads up of, okay, we need to position ourselves over here so we can get a good view of it. And they kind of just like walked around the entire temple complex area. And then they headed out into the Gion region streets. And so we kind of just followed. So when you go to the park, there's going to be certain areas where there's a lot of people congregated. There's going to be like a tour bus parking area where all the tour groups are at. But honestly, the deer are all throughout this giant park. And so if you have like a certain temple that you want to walk to, or you want to go see this certain thing inside the park, you are going to come across multiple deer. And so there's no reason to be like, oh, there's a whole group of people over there. That must be where all the deer are at. That's not true whatsoever. Just do your thing within the park and you will come across as many deer as you could possibly want. So the deer is obviously the main draw, but then there's also a temple called the Todaiji Temple, and it's also known as the Great Buddha Hall. And this is a huge structure. It's the largest wooden structure in the world. It's ginormous, very impressive, and it houses the largest bronze Buddha statue in the world. Now, I have read some conflicting statements. Some places say that it is the largest Buddha, the largest bronze Buddha statue. Some say it's one of the largest bronze Buddha statues. I'm just going to say it is, and you can fact check me if I'm wrong and tell me which one is actually the largest, because it was pretty large. So this temple in particular, you do need to buy a ticket to go inside, and you actually basically need to buy a ticket to even get into the area surrounding it. I'm sure you can see it from afar, but if you want to get close or any good pictures at all, you're going to want to buy a ticket. And let's be honest, the tickets are like $2 per person, so definitely, you know, not a big deal to just go ahead and buy those tickets. Now, I was kind of concerned when I was researching and there was no way to buy tickets in advance. I was like, man, I'm going to be standing in line forever. This is going to suck. But I don't think I stood in line for more than like 30 seconds to buy a ticket at any of the temples that I had to buy a ticket for. They were super on top of things. You literally just go up there, hand them the money, they hand you the ticket and your change, and you're gone. And I don't know why the rest of the world isn't on this system, because it was the easiest thing possible, and I do not know why everyone else makes it so complicated. But it was super straightforward and just like one, two, bam, you got your tickets and you're heading into wherever you're going. So do not be worried about wasting a bunch of time in line, except for the Osaka Castle. Okay, this does not apply to that because that line was long. They need to get it together over there. But these other temples, you know, like 30 seconds, I had my ticket and we were moving on to the site. So I do recommend the Todaiji Temple going inside. We were probably inside for maybe like 15, 20 minutes. So we weren't there very long, but it's just very impressive. And I think you would be missing out if you didn't go check it out. Another temple inside of Nara Park is called Nigatsudo, and it is a pretty temple. I think at night it would be especially pretty, like all lit up and stuff with lanterns, but the biggest draw is it's up on a hill, and so it gives you a great view of all of Nara. So it was a little bit of a hike, maybe like 20 minutes from Todaiji Temple, but I mean, you're walking through this beautiful park, you're not going to mind anyways, and you're going to want to be outside with the deer, so might as well have a goal in mind and walk to the Nigatsudo Temple. Also, I should have done a little bit more research. Whenever I went to Myanmar, I had like a great understanding of the difference between a temple and a pagoda and a shrine, and I probably should have, you know, re-upped my game there, because there are temples and there are pagodas and there are shrines in Japan, and I'm just calling them all whatever I feel like at the moment. So my apologies if I am messing those up as well. Okay, now there is another, so let me take a step back. That was all once we arrived into Nara. We did all of that on that first day. So we arrived in Nara around noon, around 1 o'clock, we dropped our bags off, and then we did those temples there. The second day, so we spent the night in Nara, and a lot of people don't spend the night in Nara. It's like a day trip from Kyoto. It's a day trip from Osaka. I really imagine this being like our overnight stay in Pisa in Italy. A lot of people say Pisa is a day trip from Florence, which it is, but I said, hey, if we spent the night, everybody would leave and we would have it to ourselves, and that'd be really cool, and it was. And so I kind of had that same idea for Nara, and it was very cool. Not quite as cool as Pisa to be there all by yourself at night, but especially the morning after spending the night there, everything was just so peaceful. There were like zero tourists there, and so we kind of just like walked around town, went to a coffee shop, talked to some locals, and it was just a lot more peaceful than it had been the afternoon before. So while I'm not saying, oh, you have to spend the night at Nara to get the full experience, I would recommend it. I don't think there's any reason not to spend the night in Nara whatsoever. We stayed at a place called the Nara Visitor Center and Inn, and it is exactly what it sounds like. It is the visitor center for the city of Nara, and it is also an inn. And it is run by basically like the city government there. And so they have great deals. And it was like, besides a couple of places that you could stay inside the actual park, it was the best located hotel as well, and the best priced hotel as well. So I highly recommend staying there. People there were super friendly. Even if you are not spending the night there, they offer multiple things for free just because they're the visitor center. So they're really trying to bulk up tourism there in Nara. So they have like a free baggage holding area from like 8 a.m. until like 6 p.m. every day. And so even if you're not staying there, even if you're just like, a lot of people take day trips from Kyoto to Nara to Osaka and kind of just stop there halfway through the day. So you can leave your luggage there for free. They also have calligraphy classes and origami classes for free. So you can kind of just walk in and be like, hey, I want to learn how to write my name in kanji. And they'll be like, okay. And they'll come over and give you the calligraphy stuff and print out your name for you to write. And it's really cool. The people working there are super friendly. And we did the calligraphy class and had a great time. They also have like traditional clothes that you can dress up in and take pictures. And then they do have a traditional tea ceremony, but that one is at like certain times and you do have to pay for it. But the other three things were free. So I highly recommend, even if you're not spending the night there, go in and check them out if you have some free time. They have a lot of things to offer there. Okay, so that second day in Nara, when we got up, we went to the coffee shop, and we got a few recommendations from a local there, and he recommended the Kasu Gataisha Shrine. And there's also, I just mentioned another shrine called the Nigatsudo Shrine or Temple. There's a trail that goes between those two, and it's full with like these stone lanterns the whole way. And so I think that's a pretty popular path to walk, but you can also just walk straight to the Kasu Gataisha Shrine, and it's also very pretty. And so we went there, and there's a lot of lanterns, there's a lot of the orange torii gates. It's a very pretty, pretty area, and so if you have a little bit of extra time, you can check that out as well. There was a festival happening the night we spent the night there, and I did not know about it, which was super frustrating because the next day everyone was like, oh, did you go to this festival? Did you go to this festival? And so I just want to give like a heads up. It is very difficult, in my opinion, to find festivals in Japan when they're happening. I did quite a bit of research and I never saw anything about this festival. I did find another festival in Kyoto, which I'll talk about here in a second, but that was like just randomly after I'd already looked into this shrine multiple times. And I really just feel like there's so many different festivals happening in Japan that there's probably always going to be one going on. If you just ask the right people, they might be able to point you in the right direction. But also don't feel too bad if you miss out on them, because they're not, they need like a website that's just like all of the festivals happening in Japan, and you know, that might help you out. Because I did find one festival, and then I looked deeper into it and like asked some people about it on different like chat forums and things like that, and they're like, oh yeah, I don't think they're doing that festival anymore. And so then, yeah, I really don't know. Finding festivals there is very difficult, in my opinion at least, but I think there's just so many going on that you can definitely stumble across one or two while you're there, even if you're not really trying. So if that's something you want to do, maybe ask some locals once you get to a city and see like, hey, are there any festivals going on over these dates, and see what you can find. But definitely don't rely on coming across them on, you know, anything on the internet, because I don't think that comes up very often. Okay, so one last thing to do in Nara is there is a mochi shop, which is like this pastry thing. I don't even know how to explain it. It's like this gooey pastry with like red bean paste, and it has like matcha powder on the outside. I don't know. It tastes really weird, and it has a strange texture. But there's this famous mochi store there where every once in a while they'll come out and they'll like throw this big ball of mochi stuff into a wooden bowl, and then they'll just like pound it with wooden mallets, and then it's like the traditional way that it's made, and it's like a big tourist thing. And so we did that. It's supposed to happen like every half hour. We got there at like 8 a.m. when they were supposed to start, and they hung out a sign that said, oh, the first one's not until 10. So that's when we hiked to that last temple, and then we came back, and then it started at like 10:15. And then the first day that we were there, we went and they weren't even open. So I think it's pretty regular, but you know, I definitely wouldn't just take a trip to Nara to see the Mochi Men to begin with. But yeah, that's something else that you can check out while you're there. It lasted like 2 or 3 minutes. But if you like mochi, then you can get like hot, fresh mochi straight out of the machine there, which was pretty interesting. Okay, after Nara, we headed over to Kyoto, and we were in Kyoto for 4 partial days, 3 nights. I thought there would be more to do in Kyoto than Osaka. At the end of the trip, I liked how the trip went. I liked how long we spent in each place. I did not expect to enjoy Osaka as much as I did. I didn't think there was going to be as much to do there. I definitely could have spent another day in Osaka for sure, but I did appreciate having all 4 partial days there in Kyoto. So one thing about Kyoto, there is still great transportation, but it is definitely not as convenient as it is in Osaka. So what I mean by that is in Osaka, it was like basically every street corner had like a metro station. You might have to walk like 5 minutes to get to one. But in Kyoto, it might be like a 20-minute walk to get to a train station. You might need to take a bus instead of a train to make it more convenient. It just wasn't as streamlined, I suppose, as Osaka. It was still good. It just was not as good. Them around for about an hour, catching different pieces of this festival, and it was really cool. If you can see a festival while you're there, I would recommend trying to, if at all possible. After that, we were exhausted because we had been dealing with a ton of frenzied tour groups all day, and so we headed back to our hotel. And this is a good example of like the train situation there in Kyoto. From the Gion region to like the downtown area, it was like a 45-minute walk, or you could like walk 20 minutes, take like a 2-minute metro ride, and then walk another 20 minutes. So that's like, it was literally the same amount of time, and you literally just saved 3 minutes of walking by taking the metro. And so that's a pretty good example of Osaka versus Kyoto. In Osaka, the train would have been 2 minutes away and would have dropped you 2 minutes from your hotel. But instead, we were having to walk 45 minutes, and there was no train in sight. So that's kind of a good representation of the difference between the two. So the last full day that we had in Kyoto, I wanted to go to the Kinkuji Golden Pavilion Temple. And this is another really famous temple there in Kyoto. And we actually took the bus to get there. The train would have dropped us off maybe like 20 minutes from the actual temple, whereas the bus dropped us off like a minute walk from the temple. And so I was like, let's just try the bus, see how it works. And this was the only bus ride I took, and it was around like 10 in the morning, 9 in the morning, something like that. So traffic wasn't bad, but it was very smooth. The bus did arrive, you know, like maybe 5 minutes after what Apple Maps said it would, but it showed up. It was the right bus number. We got on. It took us exactly where we needed to. It was a flat rate. I think it was like 150 yen or something, and it didn't matter if we got off on the first stop or the 20th stop. It all cost the same amount, so we already had our money ready to go. You can also use those Metro card things on the buses if you have one of those as well. So one-of-one on bus rides there in Kyoto. I would recommend it. I have heard that they aren't the greatest, so maybe I just got lucky. But I would say don't be afraid to use the bus if it's going to save you a ton of time walking. So the Kinkuji Golden Pavilion was really beautiful. It was a perfect day. It was sunny, a few clouds in the sky, but there's a lake in front of this Golden Temple that just reflects it, and it just looks absolutely amazing. They also, it's like a one-way route, and so there's not just a bunch of people wandering around. You literally just go in, and then you just follow the route around the Golden Pavilion. You take it up a hill to get a different view, and then you head towards the exit. And so it's very streamlined. It was not very crowded while we were there, and we were there maybe 30, 40 minutes and had a good time. It was just enough to get as much out of it as we wanted to, and then we were on to the next thing. So after that, we headed over to the Arashiyama area of Kyoto, and this is after the Gion region. This is probably the second most popular area. It was also very busy, not as much as Gion, but there were a ton of tourists there. And there's two places to visit in the Arashiyama area. The first is the Owatayama Monkey Park, and this is about a 20 to 30 minute hike straight up a mountain. And I would dare say it was harder than the Fushimi Inari hike. It was literally just 20 minutes straight up on stairs, and you reach the very top, and there's like, you're basically just at the top of this little mountain, and there's a bunch of monkeys up there. When we got there, it was like the top of the hour, and they were feeding the monkeys, which is really cool to see. You can also pay to feed the monkeys yourself, but I really don't like monkeys, so I skipped that part. The monkeys were really cool, and there just was not a lot to do up there. You kind of just got up there. There was maybe an extra 100 meters that you could kind of walk up the hill a little bit more to see like the monkeys and trees and things like that. There was a great view of Kyoto from up there. It's basically the view I was expecting from Fushimi Inari. But we probably spent 30 minutes up there just taking pictures, looking at the baby monkeys, and then we are ready to head out. So definitely hiked longer than we stayed up at top. But I would recommend going. It was pretty cool, especially if you've never been to a place where there are wild monkeys. A cool experience. It did cost, it was definitely one of the more expensive things that we did. But when I say that, it was like $6 a person or something. Like, it wasn't that expensive at all. So if you're in that area, I would definitely check it out. And then near the monkey park is the Arashiyama Bamboo Forest. And if you're walking from the monkey park to the bamboo forest, you walk through a bamboo grove and you're like, oh, this is cool. But you're like, it doesn't really look like the pictures. But if you keep walking, then you get into the actual forest, which is what you always see pictures of and what actually kind of blows you away a little bit with how tall the bamboo is, how lush and thick it is. It's really cool. So when you start walking to the bamboo forest, don't just find some bamboo and then take a picture and turn around and leave. Make sure you walk through the whole forest to make sure you get to the good part. And I would recommend the bamboo forest. I thought it was really cool and shady and really pretty. I think it'd be extra pretty like at sunrise or something. We were there at like 1 or 2 in the afternoon, and it was still really pretty. And then after that, we headed back to the hotel. You can take the train straight from Arashiyama back to central Kyoto pretty easily. And we spent the night there, got up the next morning, had one last meal of ramen, and then headed back to Osaka and the airport. And there is, it's not like a direct train from Kyoto. I think we had to change trains one time between Kyoto and the Osaka airport, but it took us about 2 hours to get from downtown Kyoto to the airport there in Osaka. It was, like I said, about 2 hours, cost us maybe $10 a person to get there. So a very good deal and very convenient as well. So the train system in Japan is top notch, very nice all around. and that was our time in Japan. When you fly to Japan from the U.S., you do fly over the international date line. So we left on Saturday at like midnight, and we landed, like I said, in Osaka at around 8 in the morning on Monday. So we basically lost a whole day. But flying back, we left Osaka at around 5:30 in the evening on Sunday, and we landed at like noon on Sunday in LA. So you get that day back when you come back. So altogether, it was an awesome week in Japan. Japan is super friendly, super clean. I was really impressed by the country overall. Some great history, great scenery. Took a lot of awesome pictures. Very beautiful place altogether. Remember, it is up to you to make your life interesting. So get up, get out, explore the world, take that next adventure. Thank you for joining me here again today. If you have any questions, if you'd like to see any pictures, check out my Instagram at educateyourtravel. Feel free to send me a message. I can give you any information that you would like. And that's it. That was our trip to Japan. Thanks again for listening, and I can't wait to talk to you later. See ya.